Boston, KPFT.org worldwide.
Unruffled Beat is Clouds Below Your Knees by Texas native Ray Lynch, signaling that it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So, What's Your Story? Hi, I'm Warren Holloman. During the daylight hours, I work at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. But at night, at least on Thursday nights, I team up with Hank Rubicek, Greg Audell, and Jacob Reiner to bring you the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. Tonight, Jacob is here as always, working the boards. Hi, Jacob.
How are you doing tonight, Warren?
I'm doing great. How did you come through the floods okay?
I personally did. My laptop didn't.
Oh, no. Which isn't good at the end of a college semester, I guess.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not at all.
And also, Hank is here. Hank?
Yep. How you doing, Warren? I'm here to make sure that Jake does his homework after school. And he thinks he's graduating this semester, so I just want to make sure that he passes everything. So I'm just here watching him.
Sounds good. And actually,
Greg. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. And actually, Greg is here, too. He brought us some cookies. So thank you, Greg. We're all very grateful for that. Well, Jacob, Hank, Greg, and I do this show because we believe our civilization simply cannot survive without stories. We believe that telling stories brings people together. We believe it deepens relationships. And we believe that storytelling builds communities. And we believe that every day of every life is a story worth telling. Now, speaking of bringing people together and deepening relationships and building communities, our storytelling guest tonight is an absolutely remarkable young woman who is doing all that. She's the one who brought the Moth Story Slams to Houston. Elizabeth Sosa Bailey, welcome to So, What's Your Story?
Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be here.
Well, we're really happy we've got you here finally, and we're looking forward to hearing you. I know in just a few moments you're going to tell us your first story. And you're a little later on, you're going to tell us a story about the moth, how that came to be. But before we do all that, I thought it would be nice to just tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and where you came from. I'm guessing maybe New York, California.
I'm a third-generation Houstonian, sixth-generation Texan, born and raised inner city. I never left.
Never left. Way to go. And you went to school somewhere in the Northeast? Or?
University of Houston. Proud Coug.
Way to go. Yeah. Well, and you've, we hope we can keep you here a long time.
Great. Thank you.
It's people like you that make our city worth living in. We love our city, and we appreciate all you do for it. I'm wondering, are you ready to tell your first story?
Sure. Let's do it.
Okay. What's it about?
It is about my favorite skin affliction.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I'll be quiet and let you speak. You spend a lot of time listening to us tell our stories at the Moth. It's only fair that we should listen to you now. So you have the floor.
Thanks, Warren. So over the weekend, I went to this beer festival. I worked at a brewery for a couple of years, and I'm an expert networker, so I made my rounds to my friends in the industry, made some new ones, but this thing kept happening, right? Like, I'd talk to someone long enough, and we'd talk about craft breweries and mutual friends, but eventually they'd get comfortable enough to ask me about my arms. Like, do I have bites, they'd ask? Like, what kind of rash is that? The thing is, it's psoriasis. I always respond as casually as I can. Well, you're still a pretty girl, they'd say. Maybe try and appease me or something. Or, oh, my sister's nephew's brother's cousin has that, you know, to kind of relate to me, make me feel more at ease. The thing is, I've been living with psoriasis for most of my life. My mother has it. Her mother has it. My great-grandmother had it. It's hereditary, and it seems to get worse with every generation. So lucky me and my unborn offspring. But I like to think of psoriasis as my shield against jerks, the way I wouldn't shave in high school and much of college. I'm not going to attract some jock or bro when I've got hairy armpits and legs. So if someone's weirded out by these little red spots that my immune system causes my skin cells to reproduce at a rapid rate, well, you know, doesn't matter. I don't need that person. The great comedian John Lovitz once said, "Everywhere I go, I leave a little bit of John Lovitz behind." And, you know, so I wear stockings and tights in the summers and sweaters in the heat. I'm constantly brushing off chairs after I get up from them, brushing off my shoulders. It's not dandruff, it's my skin constantly coming off. If anyone asks how I can stand it in 100-degree weather, I tell them the truth. I'd rather tell them that than have to constantly say, no, I don't have a flea infestation or scabies or poison ivy. I just have psoriasis. And, you know, I've always had good insurance. I've always been in treatment. Methotrexate's a pill that you have to take that makes me feel like an absolute mess and not supposed to drink on it, which is hard when I did work at a brewery. I tried Humira, which is an injection that you do yourself at home, but I can never bring myself to do it, so I'd employ boyfriends or nurse friend or random people after I showed them an instructional YouTube video. And right now I'm on some new injection program called Stelara that apparently some America's Top Model has a commercial for, where she looks absolutely stunning and clear and walks through these different seasons and just looks great. But it really isn't a big deal. People are able to look past my physical image and just see me, the gregarious publicist or beer nerd or public radio fanatic. And, you know, I get dates or whatever. I don't often get second or third dates necessarily. And, some, you know, I can't tell if there's some other gal about town with like half my personality but clearer skin, or if it's me that's constantly projecting this lone wolf image that says, okay, well, that, you know, you're fun, that's nice, but I'll see you later. Not really. And I think it's the latter. But as a self-proclaimed lone wolf of sorts, I'm actually really thankful for my flawed skin, just like I'm thankful for my parents. As I was growing up, you know, they instilled this intense appreciation of the arts and culture. Even though we didn't necessarily have a lot of money, they still inspired me to appreciate the finer things. And if I had clear skin, and like was able to wear shorts in the summer without leg makeup or tights or sundresses without sweaters, I think I'd just have it all, and nobody likes a big head like that.
This is Warren Holloman, and we're here with Elizabeth Sosa Bailey on So What's Your Story, 90.1 KPFT Houston. Elizabeth, I love that story. It had an honesty, a tenderness, a vulnerability, and a sense of humor at the same time. I admire you for telling that story and talking about something that it sound that could define you, but I think your struggle is not to let that define you. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like two very strong parts of my identity are being Mexican. I'm half mm-hmm. Mexican, mm-hmm. and my skin. And so it was going to be either that or the other that I told. And I bounced it off a friend of mine, like, should I tell that story or yeah. should I talk about that? And I just felt like now is the time.
Yeah. And when you said I'm thankful, I mean, that's something that's not easy for people to come to. about whatever their challenge is in life or whatever they have that they don't want.
I try and remain optimistic.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you to tell another story. So you've talked about an illness, a chronic illness. I believe your next story is about a very serious topic called death.
It is.
Sort of.
Yeah, absolutely. It's literally about death.
Yeah. Well, so what's your second story?
A few years ago, I moved into my best friend's childhood home alone, where my friend Chris's mother would be my landlord. And I was basically just paying property taxes. She wasn't ready to sell the house for nostalgia purposes and wanted someone to live there until she was ready to sell. I didn't need a roommate, but when my good friend Becca was having a little financial trouble maintaining her Montrose apartment and going to grad school, I naturally agreed to let her come live with me in my 3-bedroom, 2-bath Southgate house near Rice University. Becca and I found our groove really quickly, already with one of those rare kinds of friendships that you form in your mid-20s, you know, deeper than that superficial networking drinking buddies that you come to create. We talked about our suitors, our families, our shared love of podcasts and cats. I loved her and was happy to help. I'm probably thankful to have someone to respond to so I wouldn't stay out all night getting myself into trouble that would end up with me grounding myself. My family always had inside and outside cats, so I followed suit with my own. Her cats, Fred and Siggy, weren't originally allowed out, but cats want to be free and explore, come back after their adventures. So reluctantly, Becca joined the inside and outside cat boat. Her cat, Fred, would go away the longest. Sometimes he'd leave us presents in the driveway. We'd leave the birds and rats and baby possums out for a while until some other scavenger would come and take it away. Or maybe a random suitor would dispose of it for us. Busy ladies, both of us would come in and out of the house frequently and talk to each other about what was going on, what our next appointment date exercise class was, so on. You know, we were really great friends. What happened today? Who's stupid? Who's sweet? Where are you going? What are you doing after? One Saturday afternoon, I was doing my usual slow Saturday rituals, and Becca comes home from lunch to change to go to the lab where she worked. It was springtime, and the heat wasn't unbearable yet, so I left the back door open for the cats to come in and out as they wished. Becca's cat, Fred, comes in with a huge cat toy in his mouth. "Did you get new cat toys for the cats?" I asked Becca through her door. "Well, I got some catnip mice last week," she yells at me. "No, the bird toy. God, it looks so real." Becca peeks out from her room to see Freddy with a blue jay clenched in his jaws of death. The scream she made, she 180s so fast back into her room, slams the door shut. "Get it out! Get it out of here!" She starts sobbing. "Jesus Christ, please just get him out." "What? It's a real bird? I mean, I knew it looked too real, but..." So I try and run the cat out. Becomes kind of this cat and mouse game where I'm the cat and Freddy's running around freaked out that we're freaked out, going under furniture, making beelines. I run into my own room and close the door, start laughing hysterically the way I do when I'm faced with anything totally out of my comprehension zone. I don't know what to do with that cat or that bird. What am I supposed to do? "No, please, just get him out." "But it's your cat. Can't you get him out? Can't you get him out?" We're shouting through doors. Becca's full-blown crying by now. You don't understand. I'm just scared. I can't. I just can't." I take a deep breath, brace myself for round two, go into the living room, open the front door, and make growling sounds until Freddy, "You get out of here. Take that bird with you." The house is covered in feathers, kitchen to dining room. Freddy goes at the door, but leaves the dead bird on the kitchen floor in front of the stove, ready for dinner, I guess. Becca comes out of her room, her hands cupping her eyes, making tunnel vision so she doesn't have to see anything. She's still crying, but wiping away her tears. "I'm sorry," she says, "but you have to deal with this." She walks out the front door. What I didn't know at the time was that Becca had a really traumatic experience as a kid with her grandmother on the farm. Her grandmother was like this tough, kind of gritty gal, right? Calls for her grandkids, asks if they're hungry for dinner. Well, let me show you how it's done. So she takes this live chicken and sets it out on this outdoor chopping block and chops the head off the chicken right there in front of the kids. No adults in sight. Somehow, in our getting to know each other, Becca and I, you know, we'd roast chickens, make chicken salad, fry eggs. I never knew that story or how deep her ornithophobia was. She called me while in her car to explain, but there I was, left in a house full of feathers and a dead bird and with who knows what kind of diseases in the middle of my kitchen. And you can't just hang out like that. So I start sweeping and sweeping and sweeping. I brace myself for that big venture, MacGyvering several trash bags in the broom and dustpan because I can't just pick it up. It still has that once-alive energy to it that I can't bring myself to touch. And I never had a dog to practice picking up stuff with plastic bags as gloves. But I did it. I disposed of the dead carcass. And like glitter that lingers, we had feathers forever.
Oh. I love that story, but it was a little painful to listen to.
She wanted me to tell that story a long time ago, and I finally thought, now's the time.
So she had a traumatic experience from her childhood. I guess she gave you one by making you dispose of the bird.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Well, you're listening to So What's Your Story. This is Warren Holloman with Hank Rubicek, Jacob Reiner, and Elizabeth Sosa Bailey on listener-sponsored, corporate-free 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We're at 89.5 in Galveston, and we're at 90.3 in Livingston. Naturally, we like to think our show is one of the best things going in terms of promoting the art of storytelling here in the Houston community, but we know there's a lot of other good stuff going on out there. Right, guys?
That's right. For one, there's our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. The Guild meets the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Printing Museum, which is located at 1324 West Clay. And for more details about all their activities, go to their website, www.houstonstorytellers.org. And then, of course, there's The Moth. It's held the second Tuesday of each month at Warehouse Live. Now, that's at 813 St. Emmanuel. It's near the soccer stadium.
Elizabeth, this is Hank, and I want you to know that we really love The Moth. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Because Jake is just trying to find the mic. There you go. You know, by the way, everybody needs to know out there that it is 119 degrees in here. Mm-hmm. We're all naked, sitting in a pile of ice. So it's a very, very strange evening. We love The Moth. We really do. We've had so many wonderful tellers who got started at The Moth on this show. We sort of feel like the Johnny Carson of...
All three of y'all have told stories.
Absolutely. And we just love having them on. We really do. And we know you've got a lot coming up next. We're hoping it's not a theme about skin disorders. But what do you have coming up in May and June?
On May, we have Escape. And June is Father's, in time for Father's Day. You can come and listen, or you can put your name in a hat. We do it totally by the lottery, so you might get picked, you might not.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, yeah. We just love telling at The Moth, too. All three of us have. I'm cooking up something for Father's Day.
Great.
That month, at least, and it's just wonderful. Thank you so much. And it's really that simple. It's a lot of fun, and Elizabeth, we understand that you've got another storytelling event that you're involved with, focusing on the timely topic of stories about storms.
Yeah, that's right. So next Wednesday, May 4th, 8 p.m. at Rudyard's British Pub, the Houston Grand Opera and the Houston Arts Alliance, Folklife and Traditional Arts, teamed up together to present Storms, Songs, and Stories, an open mic that will prove to be an eclectic evening of storm-themed performances.
Thundering out their convictions.
Now, right. Elizabeth, I have to ask, how on the earth did Houston Grand Opera wind up in a collaboration with Rudyard's?
Actually, I was honored to meet the programming director at HGO. She'd heard of me through The Moth and was trying to get insight on how to tell a story. So I told Brittany Duncan about all of my favorite storytelling groups. And of course, So What's Your Story and Grown Up Story Time, who holds their monthly events at Rudd's. So they're very welcoming to that sort of thing. And so it was just able to all meld together.
That's so cool. Elizabeth, I hope you realize how many lives you've touched through bringing the Moth Story Slams to Houston, but also through all these other events like this that you're making possible. We really appreciate what you do.
Thank you so much, Warren.
I think now our listeners would love to hear a story about the moth itself, how it came to be, at least in its Houston iteration.
I was working at another radio station in town, and the moth approached us and asked if we would be interested in hosting month story slams every month. And of course, I was a huge fan of the Moth podcast. I would listen to it every road trip, at the gym, in my car, on walks. So I was very honored, I think at the time, to be a coordinator, but to be invited into this meeting with the director of communications and the station's manager. And when they said that they were actually looking at other cities as well in Texas, they were looking at, you know, Dallas, Fort Worth, presumably San Antonio, Austin, wonderful cities that have great stories to tell. But I knew that Houston really needed this. So I went to Detroit, where my grandmother was living. She's passed now, my dad's mom. So it was perfect because she's right outside of Detroit. And my mother works for United Airlines, formerly Continental. So got a cheap to nothing flight, got to stay with my grandmother. And I was honored to be an honorary producer for the Detroit Story Slam. And that the host there is Alex Trajano, and he's doing some really amazing things. Detroit Public Radio is one of the best in the country, considering it's not a huge city. They're so great. And I was just so thrilled to just be this young gal, right? Who's just like, well, I just wanted to see what a story slam looked like. I listen to the podcast. I listen to the radio hour. What does an event actually feel like? And that apparently impressed the upper Moth headquarters. I didn't tell them that my grandmother lived in Detroit or that my mother worked for the airlines. So it must have just seemed amazing that this person was just going out to sea with that curiosity. So I come back to Houston, and there was sort of a shuffle at this station where I was working, where the director of communications and the station's manager, who was in those preliminary meetings, were unfortunately let go. But I couldn't let that, they were my mentors, so I was pretty heartbroken, but I couldn't let this opportunity escape my city's potential, right? And so I would knock on the door of the content director, possibly to her annoyance. But September 2013, we had the first Houston Story Slam. And wow, it's, yeah, almost 3 years later. I have never told a story at a story slam. So that's actually my number one bucket list, is I need to go to a story slam in another city and tell my own story in front of 200 to 500 people or whatever that might be. Houston is one of the largest story slams in the country. There's over 20 cities that do it. And we rake in crowds of 400, 500 people every month. It's grown into this amazing thing. Our Grand Slam had 1,200 people there. I couldn't get press coverage, but I could get 1,200 people to go to the University of Houston on a Friday night and see these amazing storytellers. So I'm so proud.
And I think you actually got more than 1,200, because I think I saw them turn at least 100 away.
I know. I have some friends that weren't able to go to get in because
I think you had at least 100 or 200 more. I just think that's absolutely incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You seem to have a knack for drawing people together and around something as old and traditional as storytelling. I think that's kind of cool.
I wouldn't let myself accept compliments for a long time because I feel like, well, it speaks for itself. People are fans of public radio. They're going to come. But then it was after the Grand Slam, I let myself accept it. There wouldn't be that many people, even without press coverage, just like regular sponsorship spots and people who know people who say, this is an amazing experience. You got to go. And it is. It's so wonderful to be able to see first-time storytellers. And every month there's hundreds of new people. So I do feel like I have a hand in that, finally. Mm-hmm. I let myself know that.
Well, I think that's part of why we like it, is that you don't let your personality, even though you have a wonderful personality, you let the community, the event, have a personality of its own, and we appreciate that a lot.
Thank you. Community is my number one passion.
Well, next week, Hank will be hosting the show, and he's right here, so I'm going to have him tell us about next week's show. Hank, what you got cooking for next week?
Well, first of all, Elizabeth, those were great stories. They really were. Those unfolded beautifully. And you do have to tell stories at other slams. You really do. Well, next week, Greg and I are going to be on, actually. And, folks, we start our fund drive. Yeah, I know. It happens every other day. But it's public radio. But you can get jump-started by going online to www.kpft.org, over to donations. And then go ahead and click on your favorite show. We're really hoping that it's a What's Your Story. And you can designate us as the show that will receive those marvelous pledges, generous pledges. And please give us a call during the show between 10 and 10:30 next week at 713-526-5738. Greg and I are going to be telling stories, and we're going to be talking about the power of keeping the only live show about storytelling originating from Houston very much on the air. And we've got some thank you notes and thank you gifts that we're going to be dishing out as well next week. They're kind of surprises, but for $200, you're going to be able to have a coffee with one of the hosts that you'd like, or Jacob, or maybe my dog, whoever you'd like to spend time with. That'd be great. We've got a book that we're going to be giving away. We're also going to be giving the opportunity of being a guest host on So What's Your Story. So we think we've got some really neat things coming up. But please, please, please listen in next week and listen to a few stories that Greg and I will be sharing and talking about the power of storytelling in this great city.
Well, we're just about out of time. Elizabeth, I love your stories. I love the good work you're doing. And I'm sure all of our listeners feel the same way as well. Scooter is up next with the inner side to complete the back side of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and we'll keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week. Hank, Greg, Jacob, Elizabeth, and I remind you that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
KPFT's Spring Fund Drive is coming up, and we need your support to make it a success. In May, we'll be bringing you some of our best programming to remind you why community radio matters. And your pre-pledge today can help shorten this campaign. That's right. You can make our spring shorter by donating this hour at kpft.org. And if you or your business or organization wants to make a bigger donation, you can turn that into a match or challenge pledge to encourage others to give. Just email development directly Director Robin Lewis at robin@kpft.org for more information. Again, our spring marathon is near. Please help today at kpft.org. Thanks. This is KPFT Houston. Houston.